This is, you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And this is Aboriginal Voices, the continuation, hour two.
And we're having
the
fun.
The final moments.
I'm enjoying all of the music you've picked out.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
All right. What did you want to know now, Doug?
Oh, you said that you have a special report that you wanted to tell me about. So
it's not a special report.
Well, it is to me because so far I haven't heard anything about it.
It says here that Carney government cuts unfairly hit First Nations.
Changing, aren't they?
It feels like it, yeah. Like the environment.
All right, stop and go back to the title there. That the government is...
Carney government cuts unfairly hit First Nations. So federal spending cuts may seem even-handed, but they fall hardest on First Nations, undermining reconciliation and violating Canadian law.
All right, now you're into it. Good.
Yeah.
What's it? So what cuts are you talking about? Cuts to
Carney,
healthcare?
So he announced sweeping budget cuts across all departments, totaling 15% over 3 years. These cuts are also expected to hit Indigenous Services Canada, the federal department responsible for funding essential services for First Nations people. In this time of economic uncertainty marked by increased defense spending, tariffs, and growing housing and climate crisis, some fiscal restraint may seem inevitable. Still, this restraint must respect Canada's constitutional and human rights obligations.
Mm-hmm. Now that's a lot packed into that first part you told me. One of the things that comes to mind very quickly is that housing is a problem in many communities across Canada, and the tariff threats that have been south of our Canadian border that have kind of threatened softwood lumber and lumber sales going out of the country to the United States of America. And we've got this need in First Nations communities, so why don't we just say, okay, well, we're going to take the trees, and instead of having to pay for them, say that's a donation from the softwood lumber people, and they can build houses and furniture and
a donation.
Yeah, because they can't sell it anywhere else, so you're going to cut the trees down and just leave them there?
No.
You don't like my idea.
Well, I mean, somebody will, but...
Well, if you're going to give me enough wood to build my house, I would be happy.
Then you got to get the drywall people and the insulation people and who else?
The heating system.
Heating people, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell them to give away their stuff. That's exactly what he was trying to do.
Oh. But, what about water? How are we going to get good, clean water for everybody?
No.
Is it going to be individual homes have drill a well?
I doubt it.
And then they put on the sand filtration system and then a UV light and then reverse osmosis for drinking water?
Uh-huh.
Well, they're costly things, but,
And they have to be maintained, so...
That's the good part about it, because that way we could train people in each community and they would be able to do the biannual, I would say, check up on all the water systems in each home and changing the filters and the UV light once a year and the filters every 6 months, and that way, depending on the community, and that way you can guarantee that each household, no matter whether there are two people living in that household or eight people living in that household, would have clean water.
Wow. Maybe you should run for government.
That has been offered to the governments.
Run for office, Doug.
Oh. Yeah,
no.
You think they're... Yeah, well, I don't know if I have enough time to do that.
I think you do.
Yeah, you know what kind of time I mean.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Years. Yeah. Anyway, that would make sense to me. If you're going to build a house, then you've got to have it properly heated to maintain, so you don't have your water system bursting because they're freezing cold.
Definitely. That's a big problem.
And ventilation is important because we don't want healthcare problems, because if you don't have proper ventilation, you could run into difficulties with carbon monoxide in a home, not enough air to breathe and safely, or tuberculosis sometimes when it gets started in a community, if there isn't proper ventilation system, you could get a spread of that, or any other virus or bacteria. And then there's this whole issue around storing food. And now we're going to need electricity because, a stable electric system. There are First Nations communities that have very stable electrical system.
Uh-huh.
There's no problem getting electricity set up and making sure everybody has it available. So why is it not available to all communities? See, you're right. Maybe you and I should run for the government, and we can get in there and kind of get these things started. Yeah. Okay. Well, I got a song that I would like to use. Yeah. Skoden by Digging Roots.
Very nice.
And good, I'd like to follow that with Crystal Shawanda's When It Comes to Love.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll chat with you in a little while.
Yeah.
It can't slow down, can't sit still, can I get some peace of mind? It can't slow down, can't sit still, can I get some peace of mind? The only way we ever made a change was to be brave. Not with our brains, fear will be our courage now, hope will be our strength. Can't slow down, can't sit still, can I get some peace of mind? Stand up, step up, get out of the way. Sit down if you wanna.
I'm Jennifer Campbell, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
I have on the phone with me David Strickland, and how are you today?
I'm great, sir. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And David, it's a real honor to have you here. We've been looking over your bio, and you've had a lot of time in the music industry. Can you tell me, first of all, a little bit about your history in the music industry?
Certainly. I started off as a DJ and an artist, and kind of evolved into a producer and an engineer early on in my late teens, and started to learn the craft and work and do records in the city, and started doing a lot of records from an assistant engineer, and then worked my way up and started doing more and more records over the years until I was doing, you know, the majority of the major records of, you know, hip hop genre in the city, and that kind of led me up over the years and to bigger and better things.
And you're working mostly in Toronto now?
Toronto, yeah, mostly.
And
sometimes I do projects from the States. People, like, I do stuff from all over now. People send me stuff. I don't really have to travel like you used to, but thanks to the internet.
That certainly has made a change in the industry, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And although it takes away from the fun of traveling to another place and visiting and seeing what people are all about from their own their own land.
Sometimes it's good to have people together, too. You know, there's an energy in that.
Mm-hmm. Now, this new project you started, I think it was about 2 years ago when you got started with it. Can you tell me, first of all, what started the project and how it evolved over the last 2 years?
Well, the way the project started is kind of like I've been on a journey myself reconnecting with the culture, and say 5 to 6 years ago, I started taking things a little more seriously and kind of like looking at my role in the community as a Native person, like, okay, what can I contribute? What am I good at? You know, a lot of times people try to get me to dance or sing or, you know, and I kind of was trying to find my role in the community. And that on that journey, I kind of realized that, okay, wait, I do music. That's what I'm good at. How can I use those skills to help the community? And that's how I started working with other Aboriginal artists. And that kind of how the album started was the first song I did with some guys from Winnipeg was really good. And I thought, you know what? This is what I need to do. I need to do a project and involve, you know, some of the best artists in the country and among Turtle Island. And that's a way I can contribute by trying to bring something fresh to the community, a fresh perspective, and give them something that I can contribute, which would be music. So I started working on this record, and that's what brought me to the point now where I'm finished. But I've been doing records all my life, pretty much, for other people, never for myself. And I thought this would be a good way to bring my skill set to the community and see what we can come up with.
Now, you're talking about young, the youth. Is that what you're talking about, young people who are getting involved?
Yeah, young people through hip-hop. I mean, you know, I could have done any music, but I mean, I do a lot of hip-hop. I do other types of music as well here and there, but mostly I do hip-hop, so I thought this would be a good vehicle.
This is a great time for me to ask, what is hip-hop? That I've been asking a few people over the last few days, especially since you sent us two songs that we've been we're ready to air here at CFRC, and I'm thinking, wow, this is interesting. I know from watching dance and that sort of thing, and my granddaughter does dance, and hip-hop is something that lots of kids love to dance to, but what is hip-hop when it comes to someone like you engineering sound for a record?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because that's how the album opens. The album opens with Brother Ernie Panicoli, which I'm not sure if you know who he is. He's a Cree man who grew up in the Bronx and was there around the time when hip-hop was being born, so to speak, and evolving, and he started taking pictures of the graffiti, and eventually led to a 30-year career of him, you know, taking pictures of all the biggest artists in the genre. and you know, Ernie does a speaks and teaches, and one of the things he's been teaching, which struck me, was about hip-hop and the spirit of hip-hop. And basically what he's saying in the beginning of the album is, what is hip-hop? What is the spirit of hip-hop? And essentially, he was saying that, you know, hip-hop is native culture in the 21st century sense, that the DJ is the drummer. We have in hip, before I tell you that, in hip-hop we have what we call the four elements of hip-hop, which are DJing, MCing, b-boying, dancing, and graffiti writing. Those are the four elements that make up hip-hop. And what Ernie and others have done, which I've brought forth on this album, is bringing the spirit of hip, or the four elements of hip-hop together with the medicine wheel to make the hip-hop medicine wheel, mm-hmm. which I wear. And basically what he's saying is the spirit of hip-hop is native culture in the 21st century. The DJ is the drummer. The MC is the storyteller. The b-boy is the dancers. And the graffiti writer is the sand painter, the petroglyph writer. So basically what we're saying is that this is not new. This is our culture. I mean, what's happened to us is we've been pushed away. And, you know, we're kind of out of sight, out of mind as far as the general public. And they don't see it that way because they haven't been seeing us. And they wouldn't make that comparison. So we're trying to bring back the essence and say, you know what, this is not new. This is what we've been doing. And then when you compare it, you look at it, you say, wow, this is really, I mean, it's not dead on. There's a lot of things that can go either way. But when you bring it down to the basic core elements, and even the essence and the message, which originally from hip-hop was from The Nation, was each one teach one, peace, love, unity, and having fun. And, you know, that is our culture, you know, helping each other, being peaceful, teaching each other, having fun, sharing, you know. So what I'm trying to do is show the connection to the youth, because our stories aren't heard. There's not a lot of indigenous hip-hop that's, you know, the mainstream has heard or knows of. So what I've been trying to do is show the youth that, you know, this is not, you know, this is a way for us to tell our story. And don't feel that, you know, this is new and can't do something. You can do whatever you want. So anyway, to go back to your question, hip-hop is a vernacular. It's a form of expression. It's an art. It's, you know, it's like jazz. It's its own entity. And I mean, it's for somebody like yourself who's maybe perhaps new to the genre, hasn't explored it yet. If you explore deeper and if you have an open mind, you can see that there's a lot of beautiful things within this type of music. And it's more than just music, right? It's a way of life. It's a culture itself. I mean, in a sense, but at the same time, it's something that's helped a lot of people, you know. And there's been lots of music over the years, but I'm not sure any genre has had as big as an impact as hip-hop has in the world.
Now, you mentioned about the four directions medicine wheel, and then the four elements of hip-hop. And as you bring in some of the younger musicians, do you have to spend time with them, or do they fully understand that when they get started with sharing their songs with you and their sounds?
Most of them are pretty up to speed with the music, and sometimes you have to explain that. Some of that those elements have been lost over the years. Not lost, but I mean, the younger, as the genre evolves and the new generations come in, you know, the new kids always change things. It's been happening since the beginning. In the late 70s or early 80s, the new kids came in and, you know, change things a bit, and then they have brought in the new school, and this has kept happening over the years all the way up till now. And you know, even today you have a lot of the younger kids, the older generation of artists sometimes, or the fans, will complain about the younger kids and how they're changing the music, right? Mm-hmm. They've been changing the music, and it's been evolving, right? I've even seen this in our communities as well. So most of them are pretty up to speed, but you know, they like to add their flavor to it. That's great. That's how we got this music to begin with, but it was through evolution, right?
You're bringing a big smile to my face because I can also imagine what it was like when you and I started out in what we do, and we were young and we brought new ideas, and people were kind of thinking about what are these guys doing, but here you are encouraging them to do that. That's wonderful.
Well, of course, because I kind of hear it from both sides, and some of the younger people have great ideas. Sometimes they don't, but you can't tell them what to do, and you never know what's going to come out of it. So you got to be open-minded. Instead of taking the stance of, being a purist or, but who's to say what's what, It's like anything else, we can't judge. So I kind of try to keep an open mind, and that's what I try to do with the album. There's been an evolution over the last 10 years of the music. So instead of trying to stay in the lane that I've done a lot of music in, I've done some stuff in the past and I've done newer stuff. So I try to keep a balance and keep the album fresh and relevant and, not sound like the way I might want it to sound in my heyday, let's say, because I'm not 21 either, right?
I'm just going to remind listeners that we're talking with David Strickland right now, and David is on his cell phone in Toronto, and I just imagine, David, that you're sitting in front of your control board, and you've got all these channels, and is that what you do today, or do you do most of it with the computers?
I do have a board, a console, and it is hooked up to a computer, but it is a system that uses the equipment in relation with the software, so it's interactive.
Mm-hmm.
So when I am in the studio, it's not all computer. I mean, when I started doing music, there was no computers. It was all tape. It was all gear. Nowadays, I can sit at my laptop at home and my headphones and work if I need to. I couldn't do that when I started this.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a magical thought, So the music has evolved, the technology has evolved, and with that evolution of the technology, that has evolved the music. I mean, there's things I can do now to the music I couldn't do before. That makes a big difference, and that's how some of these younger youth have evolved the music by, taking a hold of the technology and making it, trying new stuff, right? That's really the key to anything, is to try new things.
Maybe that's what we should be doing sometime, is an interview with you about the history of the technology in music, because as I sit here, I have a reel-to-reel tape machine behind me, cassette tapes.
Most people don't know what that is. When I studied radio myself in 1991, and that's how it was, tape machines. And when I started engineering back then, it was all tape.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was pretty good at, cutting tape and punching in and out, doing vocals. And, I liked playing with the equipment, and I liked pushing wires in, and I didn't sign up to be in front of a computer. I've been saying that the last few years. I'm like, I have to go get glasses because my eyes are blurry here, because I've been staring at this computer for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I signed up for all this cool gear, right?
Yeah, and wires hanging off everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's my era, right? And things were different. You were limited. I mean, if you were in a studio with a 2-inch tape machine, you only had 24 tracks. And one of those tracks was first time, so you really only had 23. And if you were on a 1-inch and you had 16 tracks, you were down to 15 tracks. And you had to make your song work with 15 tracks to record on. Nowadays, you're just unlimited. You could do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm mixing songs and there's like, 35 tracks of vocals and, 40 tracks of music, and I think back and go, wow, could have never pulled this off on a tape machine. I'd be sampling and flying stuff around, and it would just get messy, right?
Yeah. But here's the thought that I have right now, because it's happened to me as well with a radio mixing, and we don't have that many. We don't use more than 4 tracks usually.
Right.
But I end up taking it home. So do you take your work home and you find yourself working longer hours on these ideas?
Well, because of the technology, I can take stuff home on my computer, and I do end up doing that. I mean, I'm a night owl, so, for example, I'm mixing a song for somebody, and I'm also an artist, so I paint. So what I do is when I do work at home, I try to balance. I'll work on some music, and then I'll stop, take a break, go paint for a bit, take a break, come back and forth. But I do essentially end up, you know, working more hours, but I'm getting more done. You know, I can have the luxury of it being at home. It has its pluses and minuses. I have a setup at home as well, but, you know, there's that feeling of being in the studio. There's something to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to go back to your project now, because you've given me a great sense of you and working hard. Now, when you bring in some young people and they bring to you their idea for a song and for the way the sound is going to be, is that true?
Yeah, usually... sometimes I start from scratch, or I kind of have ideas I've already started, and we just build on those, and I kind of let them have their freedom, and then once they're finished, you know, putting down what they want to convey, then I kind of step back and take it in and put my take on it. Sometimes I change the music, sometimes I change the arrangement. At the end of the day, I just want it to sound good in all capacities, so I kind of, you know, I put my spin on things, which most times, you know, as a producer, as an engineer, you kind of let them do your thing and you don't give in your 2 cents. But as a producer, you know, I like to kind of like not be the boss, but kind of put my, you know, I'm in charge here, so let me just do what I got to do and make it sound good.
But it's also a learning experience for them, isn't it?
Yes. And some, I mean, it depends who the artist is. And sometimes I like to live with things and just kind of like, you know, see where they're going to be and find the direction, because it's not always there. Sometimes you got to like just feel it out.
Mm-hmm. And so just staying with that idea, one person I asked the question, what is hip hop? And he gave me more of hip hop is a sense of community, and it comes from the artist's interaction with the land. And so do you find that's happening with some of these young people bringing their, you know, their experiences on the land? And it doesn't matter where the land is, in a city, in a country, or wherever it is, but their experiences with the land. Do you find that's happening with the young people today?
Yes, especially, well, I mean, in mainstream, they're going in different directions, but I'm finding within the community, I'm noticing a lot of people, it's giving them that voice to tell their story, you know, and this is how this music came about. I mean, I don't know if you know the history, but, you know, it was started in the Bronx, and the time of the Bronx, there's a lot of gangs, and a lot of buildings were deserted, and there was not a lot of money in the community, and people didn't have instruments, and it just started with two turntables and break beats, disco beats, and funk beats, and guys were just, you know, using the break beat of the record and spinning them back and forth to make continuous songs. So basically they were poor people who took nothing and made something, right? And it became as a party thing, and then it evolved into you know, a way to tell their story. And it came from that land, right? There's an energy in New York. I don't know if you've been in the tri-state area, but there's definitely an energy there, and I could see how something like this would come out of the land, you know. And that thing that happened really sparked a revolution, in a sense. You know, hip-hop is one of the biggest money-making genres on the planet. Where would we be without it right now? How would the landscape look, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You ask yourself that.
I'm wondering, too, about inserting the language or the whole issue around literacy and music, and it seems to me the stories they want to tell through their music. Are you helping or guiding some of the young people to bring a different language to it, or a richer language into their songs?
I've been encouraging a lot of the youth that I've spoken to not all the time, but if they want, or even all the time, but, you know, to try and use their mother tongue. That's, you know, you can, a lot of us, you know, English is not our first language, but, you know, around the world, that's what everybody speaks. Everybody's going to rap in that language, but, you know, they do it in other parts of the world, France, Germany, they rhyme in their language, and I've been trying to encourage some of the Native youth to, you know, if you're a Mi'kmaq or you're Ojibwe or you're Cree, try doing a song in your language. I mean, we can speak to ourselves that way. And it also encourages us to keep our languages alive, because in a lot of places our languages are dying. Even myself, I've been trying to teach myself Mi'kmaq more and speak more and just keep it alive. But yeah, I definitely encourage them to speak in their mother tongue. But in a lot of cases, a lot of us aren't brought up with learning our languages. So maybe that even can encourage somebody to learn their language so that they can rhyme in their language.
Yeah, and but use
definitely
it.
Encourage that.
Right, yeah. And use it as a support as well. So,
and I mean, we can talk amongst ourselves where if somebody else doesn't understand, you know, you may not be familiar. There was a group named Public Enemy. It was a very, very revolutionary type of group, and they would encourage the same thing as far as, you know, this is like, they used to call it Black CNN, you know, like this is our voice to talk amongst each other without the colonists. They don't understand what we're saying, so this is our tool to, you know, share our messages, you know, and doing that in your mother tongue will do that. You can do the same thing. You can, you know, talk to each other and you know, or in the community and keep it in a coded way, in a sense, if that's what you're after. But I also encourage it in a general capacity, right?
So through this project that you're doing, how many artists have you brought in for the album that you're going to, it's coming out in September, I believe. So how many artists are on that album?
Oh, there's quite a few. Number-wise, I couldn't even tell you off the top of my head. There's at least 20, but what I try to do is involve mainstream artists and First Nations artists. So as far as Indigenous artists, there's at least 10 or 15, I believe. I'd have to do a count, but there's at least 10 well-known or established First Nations artists on the record.
And so that's a great way for the young people to actually get exposure and experience with a mainstream artist then.
Right, exactly. I was trying to bridge the gap and, you know, put us on the same level. That's going back to what I was saying earlier about bringing my skill set to the community. I was like, okay, one of the things I noticed is, and this is not just within our community, this is a problem all around, but within our community there's a lack of quality in some regards, some of the music, depending on who's doing it, right, or where, how it's being done. So I thought, you know what, if I can bring that quality and put us on the same playing field and putting us on the same level and showing that, you know, we have the talent, and, you know, here's our talented artists side by side with some of the best, and let's show how we stand up against them, right? And I think I've done that. A lot of these guys came through and did a really excellent job, and I'm very proud of them. They all really, you know, came, they brought their A game, so to speak, when they came to the studio. You know, a lot of them were thankful just to be there, and, you know, I appreciate the love.
And they walk away with a lot of pride, too, then.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, a lot of them were working on their own projects, so what I try to do is produce a song for their album. You know, they're being a guest on mine, the least I could do is give them something at the same time. And, you know, it's not me taking, because really the record's not about me. You know, I'm just kind of like the messenger or the front man, so to speak. But the concept is to bring attention to the community, to the artists, and to showcase them. That's why I'm saying it's about you guys. So I'm just showing up to say, hey, look at my brothers and sisters. Here we go. And bring them to the forefront. And hopefully it gives them more exposure, you know, than they may have had. Or if it helps in any capacity, I'm all for it.
And David, I was just sitting here listening to you and talk and thinking about what nations have been represented on this album that you're producing right now. Mi'kmaq, right through Innu,
we've gone coast to coast. We have Mi'kmaq, we have Cree, we have Niskapi, we have Haida, we have Ojibwe, we have Ojibwe Haida, we have Métis Cree. there's a friend of mine, I can't even say, I don't even know how to pronounce, he's from BC, I don't know, even know how to pronounce the name of his his nation. There's also some American native, like from America, some indigenous people from America, from different places, that are on here representing different nations. I couldn't get every nation. You know, I would have loved to been able to travel and do it on a bigger scale where, you know, if I could get somebody, an artist from each nation, that would have been amazing. I try to represent as much as possible. I really didn't have the control over where people came from, but, you know, I did unify us. I did get artists from coast to coast, and that was important. Like on the song Res Wife, that's, you know, a lot of the top indigenous artists, rappers in Canada are on that song, and there's that's coast to coast. Maybe that song will inspire other artists, you know what I'm saying? And I try to do as much as I can as far as the nations and involving as many people as I can. I'd love to travel and go to more places. Niscapi is pretty much right by Innu territory. I don't know if you're familiar with where Niscapi is. That came about because I was up there. You know, that trip was really kind of a spark in this as well, because the fellows, Violent Ground, are on Res Life. That's where I met them on a trip up there teaching. And Niscapi is right by Innu territory. Not sure if you're familiar with Northern Quebec, but it's like Northern Cree, Innu, and then Niscapi is very small. And I have, one of my great-grandmothers was Scottish and Innu, so I felt the connection when I was there. I had a great experience there. And yeah, I would love to travel and bring more of the nations together. But I think we did a pretty good job getting as many nations as we could to represent.
Once the people hear all 16 songs, or all 16 from your album that's coming out in September, you might have a flood of people from other nations who haven't been represented to say, we would like to have you come and support us, but we'll support you by giving you some of our sounds. You could have started another major project here.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people keep telling me, that you're doing another record after this. I'm like, no, I just finished. Leave me alone.
Yeah. They might not leave you alone, though, in all of this, right?
Yeah. Well, this could have been the spark that started the fire. I mean, this could turn into something else. The thing is, I'm approaching this release with the same thing I would approach going on a fast or going in a ceremony, and that is that I have no expectation. I finished, I put it together, we're trying to do as much we can to get exposure, but I have no expectations as far as, it's not about me selling records. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have any hopes or goals. You know, I want it to be heard. But I'm not trying to make, it's not about me making money. It's about me, you know, helping the community, bringing a spotlight, you know, and I don't know what's going to happen. And that's fine. You know, that's the way I've been taught to approach things in life and spiritually. And that's how I'm going to keep approaching this. Whatever happens, it's all in Creator's hands. You know, if Creator wants people to hear it, that's what's going to happen. And I'm fully okay with that, you know. If he wants me to do another album, that's what's going to happen, you know.
Yes, I'm smiling as I think of this, is that it probably you're going to be having a few people sharing with you. What we'll do, David, is here at CFRC, we're going to play the songs over the next few months and invite people to give us which one is their top one or two from it. And we're going to have some fun with this as we share all the songs that you've talked about today. And in fact, I'm hoping that there be some notes that go for people like us here in radio that we can kind of highlight the groups that are in it and as we play the songs.
Right. And, you know, there's also, I added some traditional aspects to this record. It's not, you know, constant, but there's those elements. I had brought some traditional singers and drummers in the studio, and you know, we added a little bit of flavor there, here and there. And for people who are non-Indigenous, now you got to look at it like, you know, this for our community and whatnot, but let's look at the average non-Indigenous person out there, whether they're Black, white, Asian. This is something new to them, and when they listen to this, they're gonna have a whole new perspective on the community. Outside of the stereotypes, right? Most people, when they think of us, they don't think of hip-hop, right? And you know, what I'm coming with, you know, they might be like, oh, well, what is this guy talking about, you know? Mm-hmm. But when you take in this record, you can see the connections, you know? It's undeniable, you know? And because we've never had, you know, your average rapper is not, you know, an Indigenous, you don't see an Indigenous person when you think of hip-hop, right? And that may be a stereotype, but, you know, this may change people's perspective on the community or on the artists, and you know, bring things more to the mainstream. I mean, we haven't broken that glass ceiling, so it'll be interesting to see what can happen, you know.
Now, David, I was one other thing I want to ask you about before we finish our interview, and that you mentioned this is sort of away from the sound engineering. You mentioned that one of the things that you do is you paint, and you're an artist. Are you an artist with oil paints or watercolors, or what do you do with that? And where can we actually see some of your artwork?
Well, I use a lot of acrylic spray paint and oils. I have a few different styles. My website's www.davidstrickland.ca. There's a gallery there. I'm in the process of putting a store up, and also have a partnership with a company in Minnesota. It's a native owned and run company called Dingers, and they're in the process of they make clothing, sports apparel, and what I'm trying to do is bring the artwork to life on some clothing. But yeah, I've been painting. I started painting when I was young, kind of like a backup to when I applied to radio broadcasting in college. You needed a backup, so I applied for art. And when you apply, you need a portfolio. So I kind of had to scramble and come up with some paintings. And I did some paintings back then and kind of didn't take the art. And then, you know, the rest is history. And then what I'm getting at is later on in life when I started, you know, reconnecting. And, you know, I grew up in the city, so I didn't really grow up with the culture too much. I mean, we have a reservation in Scarborough, but it's not really a reservation, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? And, I didn't really grow up with the culture around me all the time, and as I got older and having children, I started, you know, reconnecting, and part of that journey brought me back to painting, and I started with my drum, actually, my hand drum. I made my first hand drum and decided I wanted to paint my clan on it, and that led to, I mean, I'm probably about 400 paintings deep now. So, I mean, I've been working on gallery sizes, and it's just exploded to this whole other kind of, I guess, a whole other side of me that people had never seen, because I always knew I could paint. Like, you know, I had paintings in my house, but now this has, like, come to fruition of a whole other thing. And some of my pinos, people buy my paintings. It just blows me away. They spend, like, they pay me money for them, and I'm just like, wow, okay. Like, it's healing for me, it's healing for others, it's beautiful, you know. Some of the things I come up with are truly amazing. And I mean, that's from me, and I'm always my hardest critic, but other people are just blown away, and that kind of has given me another angle, so to speak, because it brings in the art, because art is very, very powerful. It's very present in our community. And what I'm finding is there's not as many artists left. Like, one of the things that got me through with this situation was that the fact that there's less and less authentic indigenous artists, you know, a lot of the stuff you see in stores and stuff is all like stuff from, you know, other places in the world that are made cheap, and I've really come into myself as far as an artist wise, as far as a painter, visual artist, and I'm really thankful for the creator for kind of like sparking that with me, because, you know, if I didn't reconnect, if I was, you know, I could have just been like, yeah, whatever, and just, you know, do my thing, but it became a vehicle as far as finding myself. Mm-hmm. And reconnecting with myself and bringing things out of me through the art, and it's gone hand in hand with the music, and ironically, I'm just finishing up a gallery size painting right now for somebody, which is going to be their album cover, whose album I've been working on. So you see, they've been brought together. Mm-hmm. You know, this album I'm working on with somebody else. You know, I wasn't planning on painting their album cover. They asked me after seeing my art, and you know, I'm my worst critic, but people like it, and I'm like, hey, if people love it, then you got to give them what they want. So I just continue to paint and do music, and you know, I trust in the creator, and we all struggle, but I keep my faith, and he never lets me down. He/she, you know, never lets me down.
David Strickland, I really appreciate taking the time to join us here at Aboriginal Voices, and you've given a lot of hope to some of the new people getting started, the young people, older people, and all they have to do is look at your art at www.davidstrickland.ca or see if they can pick up the CD and just listen and enjoy the sounds.
I hope so. I hope people get a lot out of it. I hope somebody, if I can just inspire one, you know, I've been saying this for years, if we just inspire one person, or one person hears something or takes something and changes something, or, you know, there's just that hope, you know. There's a lot of, our community, we have a lot of suicides, and if we can just save one person, that's all that, you know, I can ask for. It's just inspiring. It doesn't even have to be saving. If one person can be inspired, if one person can make a difference, we all can make a difference, you know? So hopefully somebody can get something out of it, and if that makes a difference. I hear stories all the time where people come to me and thank me, and you know, they're inspired, and that just blows me away. So if anything happens with this, that one person can make a change, and who knows what can happen. So I mean, the ideas are limitless, and I'm just, you know, hoping that, you know, my whole thing with this has been that what I'm getting at is that I'm not more special than anybody else. You know, we're all created equal, and I'm not better than anybody else, and if I can do what I want, then you can do what you want. Well, it doesn't have to be music. It can be anything, you know? And if somebody out there can take that away, take that concept away from that and make a positive change in their life or other people's lives, then I've completed the goal, you know?
David Strickland, we do appreciate all you've done and the advice you've given to everyone. Chi mi gwech.
Thank you, sir. Chi mi gwech. Have a good day.
It's a renaissance time. Peace to Rain Music.
Let's think this through. There might be a link. Let's put everything together and see if we can find an answer.
First case happened in the forest. They say it was a dog. We know that's dishonest. Second case happened at Mather's place. A teacher went missing, gone without a trace. Third case happened at the courthouse. There was another attack while we were at LePay's house. Fourth case happened at the cemetery. Last Saturday night, this is looking scary. Who done it? It's not an easy whodunit. Put together the clues, learn something from it. Who done it? It's not an easy who done it. Put together the clues, learn something from it.
Hey, look at these files. Similar cases. People disappearing. Gone without traces. Case left unsolved. The detective wrote down witchcraft involved.
Who done it? It's not an easy who done it. Put together the clues.
Ready to ride. Toronto Bronx native. Ready to rock. Put fire in gold shells. Put ride in my coattail. Full metal jacket in my hotel. Seen everything drop, including coke sales. Heard everyone talk on some old tales. Some sharks, beach parks, some old whales. Story split in one grain into four pails. It's time we make them rise out them black hills. Catch a vibe from the rap skills. I rode and build in the blunt mill. Toronto still in the gun spill. Skill but your gun killed. This was a fun drill. Shout out my natives up in Gun Hill. Ready to rock, let us show you how the Bronx build. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers, yeah. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers, yeah. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers. It's like a jungle, how the fuck am I not going under? Hit them hard with these words like I'm throwing thunder. My circle strong, feels like I'm growing younger. MCs these days, dumb and dumber. Run from you when you ain't run numbers. I was raised with outlaws, real live gunners. Natives, protectors of the land. Stop killing each other, start protecting the clans. Fucked up how you can't see us killing us or them killing me. They get time off, I get life in prison with the killing spree. What's killing me is ignorance and violence. Cops blast the shots, then call the sirens. EMS, get the body when it ain't so fresh. Body chalked on your front doorstep. Somebody get the broom, get this jealousy swept. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers, yeah. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers, yeah. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers, yeah. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers, yeah. I make it dance with them letters, huh? I make it dance with them feathers.
This is Brother Ernie Panicoli, a.k.a. the Big Red Alarm Clock. We're living in a strange time where we have colonized people. We have digital devices that control our waking and going to sleep and our daily lives. And people are addicted to technology, what John Trudell called technologic.
No logic.
I mean technical, no logic. Hip-hop to me